Hello and welcome to the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast for the 4th of May 2014. My name's TLP Watson, and this week I'm joined by Nick from Partially Obstructed View and Gareth James. We're now going to talk about the Silver Tassie at the Littleton Theatre, the National Theatre. This is Shauna Casey's expressionist play, written between 1927 and 1928. It is about the First World War and takes place at first in an Irish tenement, then on a battlefield or a ruined monastery near a battlefield, and then in a hospital, and finally back at a social club at a party. That's a rather brief summation of the play, but it's obviously much more complicated than that. Nick, tell me more about this play and what you thought of it.
Well, it's a very unusual play. I'd heard the title a lot, but didn't know anything more about it. But as the production was coming up, there was a lot of word out about it being quite an oddity, and it is. It's an anti-war play that's actually, I think the timing of it is quite unusual in that it was written only a few years after the end of the First World War, at which point the gung-ho attitude was still the prevailing one, so there weren't many of these kind of plays that you saw a lot more of as the years went on. And it does have a very unusual structure. It's a four-act structure. Three of them are, I wouldn't say naturalistic, but they have sort of a surface veneer of being naturalistic, and they're the three acts that are set in Ireland. And then you've got the second act, which is much more overtly expressionist and sort of Brechtian, and it's the one that takes place just to the side of the actual action in the war. The regiment at the time that we see them are on a short rest of a couple of weeks. And it kind of puts across the idea of the horrors of the war in song, and just a very anti-naturalistic style, which I found very effective. My feeling on each kind of act of the play is that I enjoyed that act but wouldn't have wanted it to go on any longer than it did before changing style again. It's a strange play. I think the production is extraordinary. The performances are fantastic, as you'd expect from the National. And there's a huge amount of money being thrown into it. I think, actually, just realising we haven't really said what the story, such as it is. It's essentially following a young man called Harry, who's played by Ronan Raftery, who's absolutely extraordinary in this. He kind of starts off as sort of the local football hero. And we first see him actually on a break from the war. He's returned home on leave for a few weeks, and he's kind of the local hero. He's for 3 years in a row he's scored the winning goal in the football. And when we see him after the war, he's been very badly injured. He's in a wheelchair and he's paralysed from the waist down. Something I didn't particularly know before going into this, but apparently was the case because of obviously the particular politics in Ireland. Apparently the people who came back having fought in the First World War didn't necessarily get a particularly good reception, including those, like some of the characters we see in this, who'd been very badly injured. They kind of were seen as having fought for the wrong side, of having fought for the English. So they didn't particularly come back to not just not a hero's welcome, but not even much respect or interest from the community anymore. So this is really what the play is leading to, is showing Harry and a couple of the other injured soldiers as being, they're kind of separated from the world. They've been put to one side of it, and the girl he loves has very quickly moved on to one of his friends who wasn't injured and who can kind of make a life with her, and he becomes this bitter figure in the background. For me, the biggest thing that doesn't work, and it's the play really rather than the production, is the three Irish set scenes have this recurring theme of Harry's father and his friend, who are played by Aidan McArdle and Stephen Kennedy. And it's this sort of vaudeville comedy act that runs throughout the play and isn't really funny and takes up a lot of time and just really drags out the action, so that by the time you get to see Harry actually express his frustrations, we spent so long seeing him in the background looking forlorn and chasing after the girl he loves who's left him, that we know really where he is. And by the time we actually get to him getting his big speech, it's too late, because we've been wasting time on the Vaudeville Act. I can understand why the play is structured the way it is. I think it's a very clever idea to have the kind of disconcerting changes in performance style are obviously trying to kind of evoke something of the disjointed nature of both their experience in the war and kind of their lives coming back out of it and finding themselves not part of the lives they thought they had anymore. But I don't think all of it works in the play, but I absolutely came out of it thinking that it was a play that was at fault and the problematic rather than the production, because it's utterly spectacular when it wants to be, it's kind of intense and intimate when it wants to be, and just very nicely performed. I can't see that you'd see a better production of this play. I'm just not sure that it's the greatest play.
I'm still a bit conflicted, because obviously I saw it as a good production, because it, as you say, it was. And I think it's the second act that really did for me, because you've got this... I mean, the first act was this slightly thing that went on a little bit long. You spent so long waiting for this football team to come back, you know, having been triumphant, and then they had to go out almost immediately, and you just left waiting there. And it was okay, and it was interesting enough, but it gave you a completely misleading impression of what the next scene was going to be, because then you get this incredibly weird scene where they're almost chanting, almost singing. It does remind you a lot of Brecht, but of course Brecht wasn't a well-known figure in when this was written, so it was obviously in the climate of the times. I think Shauna Casey was influenced by some of the same people that Brecht was, and so the thinking, you know, around what you get with Brecht is similar. But I'm not sure that he would have heard about him till later, or would have seen anything by him until a bit later, and been influenced by Brecht. But it did feel very Brechtian, and very as if you were suddenly plunged into some kind of thing where people are singing and chanting, and it's all written in poetry, and it took me out of it. And I think part of that is always the desire to sort of take you out of it, to alienate you, to make you see that you're seeing something acted. But after that, everything else seemed a little bit ordinary until you got to that final scene where you are getting the confrontations. I mean, certainly the act in the hospital, it held the interest, but it seemed a bit odd after the second act. And I think that, you know, the last act is well done and gets there, but it was a little bit odd. I mean, as you talked about the sort of the Irish politics, one of the interesting things in, they didn't mention things like that at all in this play. It was a bit odd for that. I don't think there was any... I was expecting a healthy dose of Irish nationalism and, you know, sort of damn the British, but I must have missed it if it was in there, because it didn't feel like that at all.
No, I mean, this wasn't something that I got. This is something I found out subsequently was kind of the purpose behind it. And I don't think that the point was for it to be about the politics. But yeah, it's unusual that it doesn't even get a mention as to why the attitude is quite what it is. And I think possibly the fact that kind of nearly 100 years later you're seeing it without that piece of information possibly makes it even harder to kind of tap into. Because like I said, I saw it a couple of weeks ago, and in reading up about it afterwards, I found out that this was one of the things it was written in response to. So it makes a certain amount more sense of what he was trying to do to know that. But I think without that sort of knowledge of the context, it does make it that little bit even harder to... tap into.
I found its absence rather odd, because I was expecting it, because of course Shauna Casey wrote things like Shadow of the Gunman and also The Plough and the Stars, and it's a very odd thing for him to have left out other than the reaction of people. But that reaction was, it was a sort of a natural thing for people who'd been left behind to say, well, it's not that important and it wasn't that troubling, although of course it was for the people taking part. It was odd that it was missing. But yeah, it's very well acted and well produced. I think though, it just in the end it left me a bit cold. I could see it was impressive, but I didn't really get on with the play in the end. I didn't really particularly like it, which is always a problem. I could see it was being well done, but I didn't really care in the end, which is always a not a nice feeling to have when you know you can see the quality on stage but you don't really care about it. We're now going to talk about Venice Preserved, which is almost a site-specific piece set at Paines and Borthwick Wharf near Greenwich. It's Thomas Otway's play, but I think from what I can gather, it's more about the setting than the play. I saw Thomas Otway's Venice Preserved a good decade or so ago, and it was an interesting play to see because I'd heard a lot about Thomas Otway. This is a man who his first meal for 3 weeks is what killed him. He choked to death on a crust of bread. I think he's a respected playwright, but not that much performed. And when they perform any of his plays, it's usually this one, Venice Preserved. So it sounds like an interesting play and has quite an interesting looking cast to it. But I hear that there are other things about it. Nick, what did you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, as far as the play itself goes, well, as far as I imagine that I saw a fairly heftily edited version of the play, essentially it takes place during an uprising or a planned uprising by some of the younger people against the rulers of the city of Venice. And you've got the character of Jafir, who's played by Ashley Jangaza, and his wife Belvedere is Jessie Buckley. And their marriage isn't kind of approved of by her father, so he pulls strings to get him thrown out of his house and destitute. So in this kind of anger that he's got against his father-in-law, his friend Pierre, played by Ferdinand Kingsley, uses that to get him on side for the rebellion. But once he kind of gets in on all the plotting, he finds that some of the rebels aren't the kind of people he would have wanted to associate with, and things start to go wrong. But this really is all about the staging. You said that Paines and Borthwick Wharf is near Greenwich, and near is the operative word. It's not actually in Greenwich. It's kind of billed as an immersive show, which I don't think it is remotely. It's a promenade show, and you're asked to meet at the Cutty Sark, but then bearing in mind that, you know, audiences are a mixed group and you can't run to the place, it's nearly an hour before you actually see anything of the play itself. There's a little bit of introduction at Greenwich, and then you have this sort of procession that's meant to be kind of representing the carnival. But it's basically just a walk along the river, which, nice enough on the day I went there, but I imagine if it's a rainy day, it's not going to be anybody's favourite start to a show. So then about an hour later, you actually get into the action, which has moved around various parts of this development. And this is the problem, really, is I mean, I went with a few people who are regular theatre goers, and I think we all got the feeling that we weren't so much at a show as at a open house for this development. You know, look at the lovely courtyard we've got. Let's move you now to see this could be a lovely restaurant. And the play feels absolutely secondary to it. The whole thing lasts for coming up to 4 hours, and I can't imagine there's much more than about 90 minutes worth of play in there. And the trouble is, I mean, you know, is as you say, it does have an interesting looking cast, and it is an interesting cast. It's a good cast, but they're giving these good performances sort of piecemeal. Sometimes the audience is standing, sometimes they're sitting, but either way, there's this very long time of having to get people around, and especially when everybody's seated, you've basically got to seat the entire audience. On one occasion, they make everybody wear cloaks. So in terms of actually getting involved in the play, it's pretty much impossible. There's just so much kind of gimmickiness around it that, I mean, even just getting there is, you know, you've got like pages of instructions on how to be allowed in. You've got two different tickets you have to bring, and you've got to wear a mask that they send you to print out, and you can't use your own money in there. You've got to convert it into their ducats, which we came up with a number of reasons why they might want to do that, and all of them cynical. It's just kind of layer of gimmick and eccentricity on top of layer, and it all just distracts from the play and from the performances, and just made it a very strange, and not, it really isn't a piece of theatre. I think, you know, if people want to go and do something with their friends and have, you know, a dress up and go on a kind of nice little walk along the, well, sometimes along the river, but mostly it's kind of in like back streets between Greenwich and Deptford, then maybe see little snippets of a play. But it's not really theatre. It feels a waste of a really good cast.
I can't help noticing in one of the reviews I've been looking up, there is a mention that some of the funding for this production has been by a set of developers, and whether it's the developers of the Wharf.
It
does feel almost like an advert for the Wharf in that, and you know, that's possibly why they chose the play. It's an odd play, though, because, of course, Otway wouldn't have really known about Venice. I mean, they would have got a lot of Italian plays in being translated and ripped off for the British stage when he was writing, so they would have known it from the plays, and they would have known it from some of the stories what they were ripping off when they were doing sort of rewrites at the time. So that's the Venice he would have known. It wouldn't have been authentic. So it does seem a bit odd, sort of them shoving what appears to be authenticity. You know, you meet the Doge at the Cutty Sark, and then you go on a big procession. It all sounds as if they're trying to be very Venetian, but this play is sort of in an imaginary Venice rather more than in anything real. So it does seem.
I wouldn't say the production is in anything other than an incredibly imaginary Venice as well. And like I say, I mean, it's set in this development. I mean, you know, however you want to look at it, that's just where it is. You know, it feels like everywhere you go has been chosen more to show you what nice views there are from there. Doesn't the courtyard look nice? Don't the flats look nice? It feels incredibly cynical, and it doesn't help that, you know, it is public knowledge that it's been funded to a huge amount by the developers, who obviously would like to sell the spaces to people. So it does feel like an advert. It does feel like you've paid probably quite a lot of money, although this is another of the very strange things about it. Depending on when you went on the website, I mean, to within minutes as well, the prices just kind of went up and down, and the booking fees seemed to be completely random. So I don't think any two people paid the same thing. You know, I want to kind of think that from the point of view of the actual creatives, that there was the right sentiment behind it, and that it's kind of ambitious and just too ambitious and has not worked. But there is obviously this nasty feeling that there's also just an entirely sort of cynical reasoning behind it as well. Yeah, it's not something I could recommend. It's a really good cast being utterly sort of wasted on gimmicks, and there's just not, you know, it's a very long show if you factor everything in, and very little of it is actual play.
We're now going to talk about an intervention, which is Watford Palace and Payne's Ploughs' production of a new Mike Bartlett play. He's had quite a run recently, with Charles III opening earlier this year, and now this new play. It's a two-hander starring Rachel Sterling and John Hollingworth, and they are characters just known as A and B. Gareth, tell me more about this and what you thought of it.
Well, it's a play about friendship, and as we meet these two characters, whose names we never know, we know that we're told that they've known each other for 3 years, that they're good friends, and she's berating him for not turning up at an anti-war demo, and he sort of doesn't see the point, really. And we then see the evolution of their friendship over an indeterminate number of years, but during that period of time, over 5 scenes, that was the first scene, over 4 more scenes. He gets married, he has a child, and then he ends up seeking refuge and solstice and turns up and somewhat surprised as to what he finds, really. So it's really a story of a friendship. And I think it's a very real friendship, because it sort of shows you, you know, how one person can see the friendship as stronger than the other. And it shows you what happens when somebody goes into a relationship and the effect that has on a friendship. And the whole play for me rests on the chemistry between the performers and the quality of the acting. And that's where this for me shines, because Rachel Sterling and John Hollingworth are terrific. And I think they really do great chemistry together, completely believable as friends. And you sort of feel as if they must know each other. Such is their connection, really. I saw this within the same 7 days as I saw King Charles III. And I mean, it's hard to imagine it by the same playwright, really, because this is a very intimate piece, a bit like a piece he did at the Royal Court Upstairs called Cock, sorry about the title, and King Charles III is a much more kind of grand epic piece. So it was quite an interesting contrast, really. So I think it's a different sort of Mike Bartlett play, but it's a play that, for me, worked very well and kept me quite captivated, really, for about 90 minutes. But it's not of the sort of scale of the King Charles III or Earthquakes in London or his other sort of big plays, or indeed his adaptations, things like Chariots of Fire. But still a very enjoyable play. It's actually put on a Proscenium Arch stage in the lovely Watford Palace Auditorium, but it actually mostly occurs in front of the curtain. And if you look at Mike Bartlett's stage instructions, he says, you know, like Morecambe and Wise, and it's a bit like that. It's in front of a red curtain a lot of the time, or in a black box space some of the time as well. So it's very sort of minimalist staging with very few props and no set as such. But it worked very well, and I was quite taken by the sort of the warmth of the audience response in Watford. I mean, people were clearly enthralled with and enjoying this play. So I was glad I made the trip up to Watford, really.
It is fascinating that he has a lot of... I mean, he has a big following these days. I mean, people went up for Love, Love, Love when that was in Watford. I mean, we'd heard a lot of buzz about that. And I remember going up for Love, Love, Love when Payne's Plough had that in Watford while touring, and it was the closest point it got to London until it was brought into the Royal Court. So this is another one that may one day end up in slightly closer to London than Watford, but is going to be toured around, perhaps. I don't know the details exactly of the tour. One of the things I found interesting about it is the characters are called A and B, and it does look as if Mike Bartlett doesn't want them to be that gender specific, because they could easily be two same-sex friends or two, I'm not sure about two women friends, but certainly a man and a woman or two men, it could certainly work that way. And it was a really clever play, I thought, and a very good study of that kind of friendship. And as you say, the acting is wonderful, I think. I mean, I was so impressed by Rachel Sterling. I don't know John Collingworth that well. I've seen him in a few things, but he was impressive too. But it was really, you know, it was all about Rachel Sterling for me, but that probably tells you too much about me.
The point you make, though, about it can be played by different actors, he does actually... I bought the programme play script, and he does actually say in that the two parts can be played by any actors of any age, ethnicity, or sex. So he actually really does mind, because it's about friendship. So he really does mind, you know, who actually plays the parts. And your point about Rachel Sterling, I mean, I think she's, you know, I mean, the last thing we saw in was in the Finbra, in the Ratigan variation on the theme. And I mean, she's just a terrific stage actress. And what was uncanny in this for me is that as she's sort of maturing, she's getting more and more like her mother, Diana Rigg. And she looks, for me, uncannily like her mother now at a sort of similar age, really. But she is really turning into a terrific stage actress, I think.
One of the things that reminded me of Diana Rigg, of course, is that she did one of the early things I think I saw her in was Theatre of Blood.
Yes.
At the National Theatre, which, of course, Diana Rigg did the film.
Oh, I didn't realise Diana Rigg did the film. I did see Theatre of Blood, the improbable show, which I really rather enjoyed, and I remember in it. But I hadn't realised that Diana Rigg had been in the film.
Yes, they were playing the same role.
Oh, right. Well, that's nice. But she really is. I mean, you know, I because of my schedule, I was kind of forced to go until Wednesday afternoon. So the audience wasn't a sort of, you know, a sort of audience of people you and I would know who followed Mike Bartlett to Watford. It was sort of, you know, it was a typical midweek matinee audience, which is why I kind of commented on, you know, how much they enjoyed it, because they were a fairly unlikely bunch of people for this play, but they clearly were enthralled by it, and I thought that was very nice. And I think it's great that, you know, work like this goes out on tour around the country. I mean, Payne's Plough do a terrific job, I think, of touring high-quality work, and then often we're lucky enough to see it back in the West End, as we did with Love, Love, Love. But I support what they're doing, taking new writing around the country and then maybe bringing it into London, although I know a lot of people think they're kind of avoiding London, and that's not fair. Well, I think London gets enough of new writing, thank you very much. I think it's perfectly fair.
My only objection in the past to what Payne's Plough do is I don't mind them spending most of their time outside London, but a little bit closer to London than Watford would be preferable.
But that's not what their grant money's for.
No, I know it isn't.
Grant money is for touring new work around England. So, you know, that's their raison d'etre. And if we're lucky enough to get it in London, then lucky us. And we have, you know, we've seen almost everything they've done in London. The Roundabout Theatre programme came to Shoreditch, and Love, 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 as you say, came to Royal Court. So I think, you know, we do typically see most of what they do.
You can find us at AYULTP on Twitter, on the as yet unnamed London Theatre Podcast page in Facebook. On the web, we are AYULTP.com, and the podcast can also be found on both iTunes and Stitcher, where you can leave a review. Thank you. Goodbye.